This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome, everyone. Really, really nice to be able to practice with all of you this morning. Really wonderful. My name is Oshin. I'm one of the main teachers here at Jikoji. I kind of live here like a third of the year, a quarter of the year. And the rest of the time I live on the East Coast. We have another small sangha. That small sangha works with people with differences and disabilities a lot. That's a special kind of thing. I myself, I'm deaf. I can't hear anything. If at the end, when we have Q&A, or if during my talk, you don't understand something I'm saying, just raise your hand or, I didn't get that, And I can repeat myself, okay? I like to say, I know I'm deaf. You're not going to offend me by saying you talk funny, So just raise your hand. Was thinking, I don't often get to give beginning instruction. And it's really one of my joys, and it's something I really enjoy, is giving this beginning instruction and teaching people what our practice is about. What are we doing here? And I really enjoy meeting a lot of people who have never experienced the practice before. This is a really special thing. In Zen, we have a phrase about this. We call it beginner's mind. Beginner's mind, We like to say, as Suzuki Roshi said, the mind of an expert. There's very few possibilities in the expert's mind. But in the beginner's mind, it's all possible, It's very wide open because we don't know. We don't know. We don't know really what our life is about sometimes. We don't know what our practice is. We don't know. Sometimes I have a strong feeling I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Especially in some of these moments in our life, with how the world feels even lately. Sometimes I feel like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. Maybe a different kind of, I don't know. But also a valuable, I don't know. And as I'm giving beginning instruction, I had this really clear thought of, I'm very interested in this room, these people in this room. A whole bunch of people decided on a random Sunday morning that they wanted to drive up a mountain and they wanted to sit together and they wanted to figure it out and they wanted to give back. That's awesome. That in itself is a very powerful thing, And then I get to meet all of you with all of this freshness and aliveness, because you don't know what's going on. So if we can drop the anxiety and just embrace that beginner's mind and just be curious and see what's here. Whatever's arising, we're just gonna meet it. Whatever's arising, we just meet it just as it is. It doesn't need to be anything else. And you can feel, It feels stronger, sitting together, practicing together. To me, it's very clear because part of the year I live somewhere else and part of the year I live here. And so sometimes I'm practicing alone a lot. And then I come together with all of this energy and I can feel it, and I can feel you supporting my practice. And I hope you can feel me and the rest of the room supporting your practice. But I know a lot of us probably came up the hill here and wanted to learn to sit and wanted to maybe have some close contact with nature too over here. And I think that's a deep calling. Maybe we were a little curious, but for some of us, a really deep calling of what to do now. What do we do now in our lives? It feels like at times a challenging time to practice. And so when I'm teaching, I get a lot of questions about that. Well, a lot of the questions I get specifically start with, in the times we live in, what do I do? It's challenging sometimes to practice. It's challenging to hold those doors wide open at Jokoji. Sometimes that's hard. We're a small crew and we try and accommodate and love everybody who comes through the door and help them on their way. It's hard sometimes, as you can imagine. And I know for you as individuals and me as an individual, it's hard to keep those doors wide open, especially in challenging times. But that's our practice, right? That's a lot of our practice. And my sign language interpreter was supposed to be with us online, so I'm assuming there's some technical issues. So if you see me, I'm keep looking over to my right. I'm trying to meet somebody who hasn't arrived yet. We'll see who joins. But yeah, even people online, even if you can't make the drive, even if you can just join us on Zoom online, that's still a great way to show up for yourself and for the world. Feel like we make that temple every time we come together. It's not this stuff, but it's this stuff. We come together and we practice. It's like we've made the temple, we've made the place. And when I'm off practicing on my own, it's the same. Checking in with my breath and my body. Oh, there's the temple. I found it. When I feel like I'm far from Jokoji, when I feel like I'm far from my teacher and my Sangha. So in the Soto Zen tradition, we really love the writings of our founder from the 13th century. His name was Dogen. And we love his writings. He was a mystic and a poet, and he wrote beautifully. Sometimes his words were very hard to understand, though. They're very mystical. And they used a lot of poetic imagery to help us understand what it is to be a spiritual being, what it is to be an adult in our lives, to show up in our lives, And some of that language is kind of hard to get next to. And if we're new, especially, it feels like total gobbledygook. It's like really different. And so you understand that when we read Dogen, we're often not reading it with this eye. We're like reading it with our Dharma eye. It's like we're reading it with our heart. And we understand that sometimes my brain's not picking up everything, but it might still be very radiant or luminous to my heart, to my other parts of me. So I can, like, again, letting go of that anxiety, letting go of this idea that I need to know, I need to understand everything. But and kind of trying to sit with some of these questions myself. How do we practice in these challenging times? And questions I thought. I went to Dogen and I said, what did our great original master, Dogen, have to say about this? And how do I live my life? Not how someone else is living their life. How do I live my life? How do I do this? So Dogen, he was born in the about the year 1200 and lived to about 1252. So this is a while ago, right? So what is this ancient teacher offering us? And when I'm reading some of his writings, sometimes I like to flip back to the colophon and it says, written in the year such and such for this illustrious group gathered on this day and this place. It's really nice and kind of gives me a sense. But then I also, when I look at some of the dates, and I go and I look at Japanese history and I look at what was going on in the world at that time, and these teachings land with me a little bit differently. They feel a little bit different. So you have to understand in Japan during Dogen's time, this was the Heian period, right before the Edo period, which was kind of a little bit warring, but mostly this very stable samurai period, basically, is like the way I like to think of it. It's one of the last classical ages of Japan. And you have this shogunate government, basically samurai government, right? So all these warlords had divided up all the states and had all these territories and had settled into a semi-stable state for about 2.5 centuries. So it was about 300 feudal lords. So there was a couple of periods during Dogen's life, and then of course before Dogen's life and after Dogen, during our life as well, there were these unstable periods where we don't know a lot about what happened to Dogen, but we do know that his original temple was abandoned and left. So I also like to think about all of us gathering here at Chikoji, and in some tellings of the stories, the temple was burned. There's different versions of the story, but all we know for sure is that they were kind of pushed out and they had to leave and establish their temple somewhere else. So we like to think, oh, if only I was alive in Dogen's time and I could practice with the great masters, then everything would be, all of the conditions would be just perfect for me to practice and realize myself. And then we start to read, you know, fire, earthquake, famine, another fire. This was all going on. And so I imagine Dogen's students and Sangha and the people he cared about were asking similar questions. We were saying, how do I practice this? How do I live in these unstable, uncertain times? It's a time of a lot of social unrest, but also Dogen felt that Buddhism itself was also dying. It was becoming really corrupt and that's one of the classical teachings of Buddhism. We believe in three ages. There's this like really good age when like Buddha was around. Then there was an age right after Buddha where they were still really good. You can get the teachings really easily and the teachings were really pure and consistent. And then as time goes on, it kind of fades and gets harder and gets a little maybe worse. So they call that the Dharma ending age, the age of Dharma decline. So it's like, you're born in the age of Dharma decline. You're born in these times. That's it. Yeah. But also during his time. So I'd like to think, for those of you who are more familiar with Buddhism, I'd like to think that scholars tend to think that it's no coincidence that other sects of Buddhism arised at this time too, as like an answer to the tumultuousness. And a lot of those, like Jodo Shinshu, were very devotional practices. You know, help me, save me, you know. And Zen has always maintained a very internal self power instead of what we call other power, you know, Jorigi or self, you know. But yeah, there's huge wealth disparity, there's huge greed and anger and natural disasters. Sounds familiar. And in 1243, they were forced out of Koshoji, their original temple. And one day we may lose our home. Even if it's not this practice place, maybe the comfortable home that we have of practice, the comfortable places which we land in our spirit, you know, and say, ah, yeah, this is good. And now our feet may get swept out from underneath us. So during this time, I think as a kind of reaction to this, and as an answer to some of the questions, Dogen wrote a fascicle, a little work that's part of the Shobogenzo. And he entitled it the Four Beneficial Actions of a Bodhisattva. Like, it's kind of like saying the four things we can do right now. So, yes, give me Dogen. Tell me what am I supposed to do with my life? The four guidances, it's sometimes called. Or as late the other night, I was looking up other translations and I saw a translation that called it the four embraces. It's very hazy meaning. Some of my Chinese friends know here that one hanshi can have so many meanings and so many colors and so much depth. So that's why we have this. The four embraces of a bodhisattva. So the first is giving or dana. The second is loving speech, kind speech. The third is beneficial action. And the fourth is identity action, identity, identity, who we are, what it is. So Dogen, in thinking about how to practice himself, offers this to the community. He says, you, as bodhisattvas, as aspiring bodhisattvas, this is what you're to practice. And what do we mean when we say bodhisattva? We say it's a person who's practices, but has chosen to delay their complete and final awakening in order to support all beings instead. So I thought of a really great t-shirt slogan. We wait to cross over together. You know? We're crossing over together. That's what we believe. All together, one big raft. And as wide as my job as an accessibility guy, I try and make that raft as wide as possible. So it's many beings under that raft. So a lot of us are thinking, well, how do I want to live? What's my response? First, dana, giving, generosity. It's interesting that he put this one first. And for me, it's sometimes hard when I'm feeling the world's on fire. Sometimes that's not the first place I go in my heart, is to generosity. I start going, you know, I start clinging to everything in my life, right? So, dana is really just the acknowledgement of the relationships in our life. Okay? Dana just means a deep relationship with interconnectivity. We just acknowledge this powerful flowing in our life. And we think to ourselves, what gifts can I offer of my time, of my money, of my talent, of my spirit? What can I offer in my little corner of the universe, you know, in my little neighborhood? What can I offer? What can you give right now of yourself? What gifts can you give? You can also give your bravery. That's a very powerful gift, to lend bravery, to give strong spirit to others. And I don't mean to go out and act in a foolish way. Well, that's sometimes warranted. What I mean by bravery is sometimes it just means showing up when it's uncomfortable, right? Showing up and living in the way that I know I want to live like. This is the kind of person I am. Sometimes I'll throw something at the wastebasket and miss. And I'm like, oh, I get it next time I throw something out. I think, nope, this is the kind of person that I am. And I get up and I walk over and I pick it up and I put it away, right? It's just me recognizing that alignment. Showing up and living like the bodhisattva we're aspiring to be. And I'll add a footnote. Of course, part of the energy of generosity is, of course, energy of compassion. But it's also the energy of this beginner's mind that we were talking about, this not knowing. Because in order to be truly generous, right, we have to meet each situation fresh and with an openness and an open-mindedness, right? Well, I like to use this in sign language. It's really fun because the sign to know, I know something, I know. But we like to say, if you know something, you're close. But if you, the sign for don't know is don't know. But if you don't know something, it's like your mind is open. We like to play with it in sign language. So we have to have that kind of beginner's mind and not know in order to meet that situation that is requiring us to be generous and requiring us to show up fully. And so, what happens when we get bad news or we think the world's on fire? We feel that constriction and the closure, and then we just find ourselves for hours on our phone, just numbing ourselves and disconnecting because it feels so wildly out of alignment, right? And we feel our shoulders go up. We were talking about this in beginning instruction with the meditation. You know, you walk into the zendo, and sometimes it takes you a minute to realize where you are and to arrive here, to realize how we've been carrying ourselves through our life. This isn't what I wanted it to be like. This isn't how I want it to be. Hi, nice to meet you. You know, you can. Like this. And sure. Yeah, 1 minute. It's connection. It's not all gone. So how can we be generous with our bravery, with our spirit, with our time, with our person? And that beginner's mind is not only a way to relax, but it's a way to think creatively and to be open. Remember, a fearful mind, a closed mind, it doesn't perform well, right? We're just going to the negative outcomes also, you know, in our mind. Well, if this happens, then that'll happen. Or if that happens, that would be terrible. And our mind will go to those negative outcomes all the time. And we start to live in those negative outcomes. And the next thing we know, we start to get those negative outcomes. Like, how did this happen? It starts here. Quite often it starts here and then into our actions. A fearful mind will just go to those negative places like that. I ran into this quote by Buckminster Fuller, and it said, "Dictators never invent their own opportunities." I just let that float out there, but when it how it applies to us, what opportunities, what kind of life are we creating for ourselves? Shit. Oh, this is, no, this isn't how it's supposed to be. And then we end up living that. Dogen said about this, the mind of a sentient being is difficult to change. You should keep on changing the minds of sentient beings. And this should be started by giving. So Dogen says, yeah, we're pretty locked in ourselves. We see that on the cushion. But also, when we're talking to the greater world, and I'm trying to convince my uncle to turn off Fox News or whatever, you know? And I'm like, the mind of a sentient being is difficult to change. You should keep on changing the minds of sentient beings. This should be started by giving. The formula is right there. Yes, it's hard. It's okay that it's hard. You should keep on doing it. This is how you do it. Giving. So the next way we're supposed to behave is kind speech. So that's speaking with others, kindness, with empathy, and a genuine desire to uplift each other. Yeah. Lifting as we climb, you know, helping each other through tough times. Thich Nhat Hanh had a vow, a little gatha he used to say. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and deep listening. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and deep listening. You want to know what the greatest spiritual masters of your age were saying to themselves every morning before breakfast? Yes, it's hard. Love them anyway, right? Mother Teresa says, right? Isn't it what we're saying? This is hard. We show up and we do it anyway. One of my students is a sober person, is trying to live without substances in their life. And his sponsor told him, you know, he's going on, I really want to be loved. I really want to be seen. I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard in my life. And his sponsor said, well, maybe your job isn't to be seen, but to see. Maybe it's your job not to be heard, but to listen to others. I said, oh, hey, right. So I think of kind speech or kind communication as a relationship. Speech and communication is both interpersonal but also intrapersonal, you know? So a lot of us have an inner voice, right? So we also know, and we have encountered that inner voice probably really strongly with our first experience here on the cushion. You can hear yourself really clearly. Sometimes it's also very negative too, right? And we're watching that. We're watching that. And we can see how our mind can be fearful. So we have to be mindful of the speech of our mouths or our hands in this case, and also our writing, but also the subtle speech of our bodies, you know, how we communicate, what we're saying with our bodies, our posture, who we are in space. That's something I'm trying to practice right now personally. How can I speak compassion without using words? It's my practice right now. I'm trying to embody that more. How will you embody that? How will you practice that in your life? Just maybe I'll shut our eyes for a moment and let's think about how we can embody kind speech in our life right now. And if we can't connect with that, maybe we can connect with a time when somebody presented right speech to us, when we received kind speech and how that felt. Thank you. This is a place where we can start. This is a place of the start of a spiritual journey. Let's see. Dogen said, we should be willing to practice this for its entire present life and not give up. World after world, life after life. So it's like we can stay here. Just stay here and start anew and start anew and see where that leads us. Next is beneficial action. So this is performing actions that actively benefit others and contribute to their well-being. So there's really not no I, no me in this. We're really talking about what we can do for others. And Duggan said, skillfully to benefit all classes of sentient beings, the sentient and the insentient, the human and the non-human. Beneficial action is an act of oneness, benefiting self and others together. So we find that when it's not about me, and it's instead serving and showing up for others, it's also about me because we're not separate. And the good that I do for myself and when I care for myself, it's good for the world. And when I care for the world, it will feel good and it will take care of me. So we understand this beneficial action now as embracing action. That term fits a little better, right? Embracing action. I also like to think of it as just expressing our universal nature, right? The same as this that we were learning about in meditation instruction, that cosmic universal oneness. Thich Nhat Hanh, he called it interbeing, as if our being is all spread out. So we're interbeing, we're all being with each other, but my being isn't limited to me. My being is shared all around, and your being is shared all around into this one giant interbeing that we're all contributing and acting out. It's sometimes a difficult space for us to move into this whole oneness. And I was thinking about that. How do I move into that oneness when I'm feeling stuck, when I'm feeling like the world is on fire or something? How do I move into that space? Well, I was thinking sometimes I'm just like, well, I go into the garden, you know? The garden needs watering. I don't know what to do next in my life, but I know the garden needs watering. So I'll go out there and I'll water the garden. And when I'm watering the garden, I notice there's a weed that I don't, I'll pick that up. And then there's a few flowers that look really ready and great for the altar. And there's a few kitchen herbs too. I'm just watering the garden. But next thing I know, I've got a little rock in my pocket. And a bunch of herbs in the other pocket, and dirt under my nails and on my head. I was just going out to water, and now where's the garden? It's in my pocket, it's on my face, it's in me, right? So sometimes we're like, how do I join this oneness? How do I feel that? And you can just start small. Things and let it work on you and let it open you up. So just water the garden. Do it with your whole self. It's the only thing in the universe, watering the garden. And then let the garden become you and you become the garden. So I wanted to read you a little poem called The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. And she asks, who made the world? Who made the swan, the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating the sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down? Who is gazing around with her enormous complicated eyes? Now she shifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is, but I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to fall down, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So I might pause here. There's a good place to pause, and you'll get to hear more about identity action and other teachings next week when I'm back here and you're all back here. But for now, I wanted to pause and see if we have any questions and answers. Okay, well, I don't have an interpreter, but I have captions. So I think we'll be able to make do. So if you have a question, please just raise your hand and ask your question clear and loud, and we'll figure it out. Please.
Thank you, Ocean, for your teaching and sharing. So I have a question. I feel like kindness has a relationship to freedom, but there sometimes you also need discipline, which to me at least doesn't lead to freedom, or there's some kind of block there. So I was wondering whether you can share some wisdom there.
I think discipline is a really very valuable energy. We need to show up and practice. Even if it's a little bit every day on the cushion, and we need to try and be expanding ourselves and our practice in our lives like this. And we feel like, having that correct understanding and that correct heart needs to be kind of met with a little bit of discipline and energy. Otherwise, it can be very tamasic instead of sattvic. It's very, in Zen, we call it rice bag Zen, or dead tree Zen. It's like, oh, you're a rice bag. You're just plopped in the corner, and you're difficult to move, and you're taking up room, you take up room in the monastery. It's like, we want to have really awake practice, not just like disconnected. And another thing we say, and we often say, is it's like two wings of practice, but we'll say it's like sila, samadhi. So it's like wisdom, right? And practice, or wisdom and compassion. It's like when the two of them come together, that's when it really flies, really takes off. Some of the ancient teachings say the wings cool each other too. The wings are cooling each other. So sometimes we have like a lot of discipline. It's very Japanese, It also, and it's, that can be very dead too, and not alive. So we have to be careful. Other questions or comments? Hi, yes, in the back.
Mentioned love and acting humans and non-humans, but I wonder like if I love what doing with them.
You might be a little too far for the microphone. It's okay. It's okay. I'm gonna have you say like three lines. And then my friend here in the front row is going to just repeat what you said so that everyone can hear it and the computer. So go ahead.
Is there a boundary of give our love to non-human or bad behaviors? Would it like reinforce bad behaviors? Is there a boundary?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I got this correctly, but the question was, is there a boundary between like preventing or like helping with bad behaviors? And what was the other part of the question?
Yeah. Is there a boundary of giving our love to?
Okay, so is there a boundary of giving our love to the bad behavior?
Giving our life.
Love. Yes.
This is an interesting question. So I think we have to be correctly oriented, right? In our practice, we also have the traditional teachings of Buddha are the Tripitaka, the three baskets of teaching. And one whole basket is dedicated basically to behavior. It's basically to how to live together as a community, mostly as monks, and how to harmonize and work with each other. So I'll say that as much as we've been talking about thoughts and feelings, they're not reality, you know? So sometimes when we don't know what the correct action is, we can look at the teachings and the old teachings on the precepts and on how to behave, and we can get some wisdom there. There's another way is we can get wisdom from other ancestors that we have. My grandmother, you know, the elders in my community, the elders in my Sangha, and the Sangha itself. You know, we get a lot of support from each other. But that specifically you're asking, like, I think you're asking a question about how we are oriented. Yeah?
Maybe.
Yeah, say more.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes sharing kind behaviors or show our love to others.
Okay, I think I pretty much got the captions. We were also talking in beginning instruction about the three qualities of mind that we cultivate in Zen. And Zen is really big on this big mind. You know, we want that spaciousness where we can react from nothingness. And, you know, this is a really huge part of Zen practice. You know, that's, you know, big mind, right? Magnanimous mind. And then we also have kind mind and joyful mind. And a lot of Zen centers focus on one or two, but really kind of don't really want to talk about all three. And one of those that I like to talk about a lot is the one people skip, the kind mind. I don't know why we skip that. I skipped it too. I remember growing up reading Zen and being like very, you know, I was a teenager. I wanted to be in a kung fu movie. You know, this is how I was training Zen, you know? And I realize it's much softer than that, right? So what you're saying, like, it all starts with me on the cushion. And when I'm sitting there and I'm counting my breath, one and two, and I notice my mind wandering, a lot of us, our instinct is to say, get back here. Get back on the cushion. You did a bad thing, right? And we kind of yank ourselves back to the present moment rather than inviting ourselves back to the present moment. So that's where kind mind comes in, the cultivation of compassion and all these things. So we can reach out to ourselves and invite ourselves back to ourselves and come back into alignment. And it's from that place, and then we can respond, right? So I found it was like, be kind. I'll offer you one more other little teaching that I love is the Zen peacemakers have three, it's a kind of a Zen social action group, really kind of cool stuff that they do, really different. But they have three tenets, three core tenets, and it's not knowing, bearing witness, and loving action. So if we can just take those three things and apply them to our life, not knowing. There's a problem at work. I have a problem with my partner or whatever. I could drop the story and drop all of the wound and everything and just meet it as it is right here and now, not knowing, right? And then bearing witness. So if I can kind of clean myself and drop all that stuff and just arrive in the moment or arrive at the situation and just listen, listen really well, then loving action. But we have to do the others first. We want to jump to the end, but let's do the first one and then one. Take a moment before the meeting. Arrive early. Breathe. Arrive. You go into the meeting as a better version of you, right? And learn to really listen with your whole body, make your whole body an ear and listen. Or in my case, listen. Make your whole eye and ear. And then loving action arises itself. I won't even tell you much about that because if you've dropped everything and really arrive wherever you are, what's needed will be usually very apparent. And in complicated situations, I like to say, you know, the snake in the Amazon that bites you, on the other side of the river is an herb or a plant that would cure that poison. Always in these big complicated problems, the cure, the solution's right inside of it as well with the problem. So synthesis, and it's really listening, helps us come into alignment so that we can have an appropriate response. We can have an appropriate reaction. Time. Okay, that's about our time for today. So I want to thank you all for coming and practicing. And I hope you come back and continue to practice and continue every day on your own. If you're new, just 10 minutes, 15 minutes, sit in a chair, light a candle, face the wall, just okay. We're going to all place our hands together and we're going to chant the Gatha for the close. So in your books, that's page 3.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.